This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, March 18, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. News and notes as we get going today. We're going to be talking to Jesse Rogers. We're going to be talking with Ryan Divish as we continue on in the American League West previews. He, of course, covers the Seattle Mariners for the Seattle Times. And we'll be talking with Sarah Langs about her candidate for a breakout player in fantasy. But before all that, the Boston Red Sox have named Eduardo Rodriguez as their opening day starter. He, of course, last year had COVID-19. He was sidelined throughout 2020. He looks great this spring. You know, an efficient 55 pitches in his outing on Wednesday, striking out six, giving up two hits and one earned run over five innings. Alex Cora making that announcement after the Red Sox game on Wednesday. This is not good news for the Philadelphia Phillies. Zach Eflin, who is one of my breakout candidates this year, will not pitch this week because of a back injury that the Phillies are somewhat concerned about. This according to manager Joe Girardi. Also, Spencer Howard, another rotation candidate, has been sidelined by back spasms. Surgery has not been recommended for Framber Valdez of the Houston Astros so far. Jake Kaplan of The Athletic sent out that information. Valdez will head back to spring training to rehab, but there's no timeline for return to the mound. He, of course, suffered a fractured finger earlier during spring training. The Oakland Athletics are selling luxury box suites for Bitcoin. For one Bitcoin, these are luxury box suites that are worth $65,000. Let's get to the good stuff. Jose Altuve, we talked about him with Steve Sparks and whether or not he'll bounce back from some of the questions from 2020. This is what he did on Wednesday.
First pitch to Altuve, breaking ball, and that's hammered deep down the left field line. It's hooking, and that ball is fair, and it's a home run for Jose Altuve. The game is tied at two.
Robert Ford with that call. He, of course, during the regular season, part of the Houston radio network. Lucas Giolito was outstanding against the Dodgers. Six strikeouts across 3 2/3 innings.
Check swing. Got him. Strike three. Painted him on the inside corner high and took something off and one gone.
We'll take another look at it. And this is something that Lucas does by design. He's one of the few guys in baseball that will throw a high change when he wants to. And I think it confuses a lot of hitters. Taylor just took it for strike three.
Collins has the glove down, the 0-2. It swung on and missed. High fastball, and Lucas extricates himself from some trouble in the first.
That was our friend Jason Benetti, Steve Stone alongside. Lucas Giolito afterward talked about how nasty the Chicago White Sox staff is this year. Justin Verlander, coming back from Tommy John surgery, hit a milestone, playing catch for the first time.
Good.
All right, ready? Start number one. Here we go. Happy St. Paddy's Day.
Woo! And after he threw that pitch, raised his arms in the air, he's on his way back. He has talked about maybe rejoining the Astros rotation sometime this year. You know, we'll see how his rehab goes. Alex Bregman, I forgot to add this yesterday. This is Alex Bregman from 2 days ago talking about that hamstring issue that Tim and I talked about. Is being a concern for a player in spring training. Give a listen to Alex Bregman.
No, I feel great. I felt great for the last week or so. I've been able to get a lot of at-bats on the backfields. And I feel like I'm in a great spot. But yeah, definitely when you face 100, 101, 102, I don't know how hard he was throwing, but when you face that, you definitely get to see where your timing's at.
He was talking about facing Jacob deGrom that day. A really good sign for the Dodgers yesterday. Kenley Jansen's velocity was up.
Kenley Jansen will come on now to pitch in the bottom of the fifth against the White Sox with a one-run lead. This will be his fifth Cactus League appearance.
What the readout is, miles per hour.
Sizes,
yes, we look at.
92
for 92. Jansen. He also went on to say he's not that concerned with the velocity of Kenley Jansen at the present time. What he is looking at, not concerned, but looking at and watching, is the command of the strike zone. Because we're seeing now the payoff for all the scouting with these younger players that are coming on.
Makes quick work of Anderson. That's two strikeouts for Kenley, again at 92.
And he wound up striking out the side with that 91-92 mile an hour fastball, his velocity climbing from earlier in camp. And another note that I forgot to mention yesterday, the Blue Jays picked up the contract option for Charlie Montoyo for 2021. Now, before we get to Jesse, to Sarah, and to Ryan Divish, first, you've heard me mention it all week, ESPN's Tournament Challenge. Get your brackets in before the NCAA tournament tips off Friday at noon. Sign up now for the ESPN Tournament Challenge at ESPN.com/bracket. That's ESPN.com/bracket. And don't forget, you can boost your bracket with the ESPN Plus Bracket Predictor. Use the Bracket Predictor to analyze each matchup, get recommended picks one game at a time, and import your picks directly into ESPN's Tournament Challenge. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Jesse Rogers covers baseball for ESPN. And Jesse, as you join us, you've got a piece coming out on ESPN.com that's really intriguing.
Yeah, it's about in-game video returning, and that's for players that want to watch their at-bats or for pitchers that want to watch, you know, where a ball was thrown. Of course, umpires are not thrilled that in-game video is returning. Just so people know the history, until last year, players could run back to the video room and watch their at-bats and analyze it and, you know, yell at the umpire later or change, you know, do a mechanical change on their swing or whatever the case may be. Well, because of the sign-stealing scandal combined with COVID, they did not allow in-game video. They didn't want players group, you know, getting in groups in the video room, you know, in small groups for COVID. And of course, they were tired of, you know, teams stealing the catcher's signs electronically or whatever the case may be. So they said no in-game video last year, and a lot of star players struggled and complained. Javi Baez and JD Martinez were at the top of that list. So they've developed a system, which I detail in the article, in which now they can watch the replay of their bats in the dugout on iPad, so they're not, you know, getting in small groups in the video room. What will happen is after the at-bat or after the play is over, within a half inning, the play will be uploaded to the iPad in the dugout so they can watch it. But what will be sort of cut out are the catcher's signs. So each pitch will start with basically the pitcher going into his motion. It will cut off the signs between the catcher and the pitcher. So that's how they'll be able to watch the replays without seeing the catcher signs. And it won't be uploaded until a half inning later. So if you're frustrated with an umpire's call, you're going to have to wait a half inning. But at least you get to see it. At least you get to see it where a year ago you didn't. And what was interesting, Buster, I talked to a lot of people about this, is just the difference in how players go about their business, right? pitchers. I talked to Lucas Giolito. He's like, I throw 100 pitches a game. I'm not really going back to analyze a single pitch between innings very often. Where hitters, of course, only have 3 to 4 at-bats, so they're more willing to analyze each at-bat after it happens. But even within hitters, Christian Yelich said, no, that's not that big of a deal. My swing on that day is my swing on that day. But then Javi Baez, for example, and his teammate Anthony Rizzo both really missed it. Rizzo said he makes adjustments at-bat to at-bat, and he's done it for 10 years. And, of course, it didn't happen last year. So each player has a different need or perhaps no need for video replay, and it is coming back on opening day. And it was interesting. Some players didn't even know it was coming back, so they haven't even been informed of it. And, of course, the one loser in the group are umpires. One umpire told me last year was sort of the best year for not hearing it from players when it came to balls and strikes because they couldn't immediately go back and confirm their suspicions or whatnot. So that's what's going on with in-game replay. Most people are happy it's back.
I'm curious about not only about Yelich, but other players. I think it was a bigger deal last year than what players are going to say publicly. I think that they were in the habit of having those tools. And in a sense, it was like they were, after developing those habits and that process of going back to the dugout and reviewing video, last year was like they were flying blind.
Yes, yes. It's almost exactly what I wrote. And you're right. Rizzo, for example, told me, look, I was really mad, but I didn't go public with it because it sounds like an excuse. But it's not an excuse. It's just, it's a fact. In his case, he's had it for 10 years and then he didn't have it. It's like, you know, take away the bat you've been using for 10 years, take away the glove. It's going to change the dynamics. So I think you're right. Many, many players and agents, especially, were calling the league office. In fact, I quote one agent, Baez's agent, where he called the league office several times, and his big question was, one, this is like in mid-August, can you bring it back at some point this season? And two, if not, is this a permanent thing? Are you going to ban in-game video permanently? And the league assured players and agents that, no, we're going to bring it back. But one reason they couldn't implement the dugout stuff was last year was at that point, the software called for a technician in the dugout with the players. And it just came back to the COVID pandemic. They just didn't want to add another person that was a non-uniform personnel in the dugout. So that's why they couldn't bring back even this system that they're coming up with last year. This year, they've developed this software where they don't need the technician and the people in the dugout can deal with it.
Tell me, what do you think the futures of this is going to be after with the next CBA? And what do you think might be resolved moving forward?
Well, they're certainly going to keep it, you know, in the dugout or whatnot. I think they want to, it's called the iPad dugout program. And previous to this year, you could have things uploaded pregame into your iPad. It could not be connected to the internet during the game. So if you wanted to upload pitcher tendencies, you could do that, but you could not do anything in game. Now there's more in game. There'll be more in game capabilities. They want to increase those capabilities moving into the next CBA. So in game video is going to stay, but they're going to monitor it as much as they can in terms of, you know, what you can access. They don't want you to access signs. They don't want you connected to the internet to access anything you want, you know, that sort of thing. So it'll be part of the discussions, and they want to do more with it, not less.
Opening day is 2 weeks away, and folks at the team level keep on waiting and waiting and waiting, especially in the American National League teams, to hear if there's any 24th hour discussion about not only expanded playoffs, but possibly the designated hitter. I heard earlier this week there's nothing going on there. I don't know if it's just part of the continued poker game between the two sides or if it is actually dead. You know, the line that I saw earlier this spring was it's dead for now. I still don't know what that means. What have you heard along those lines? Because I know National League teams would still love a 24th hour resolution.
Well, I know this, the National League teams aren't going to be, I mean, they'll be happy if it's instituted, but they're not happy the way this has gone. For example, pitchers are starting to hit in games now. Now, wouldn't that be the ultimate, you know, crappy situation if your pitcher got hurt in a spring game and then they institute the DH for the regular season? What a waste it would be. And I will give you an example that happened just last night. Kyle Hendricks of the Cubs, his first at bat in the spring. He's a terrible hitter. It's a line shot to right field. The right fielder on the Padres, I forget who it was, it actually comes up throwing to first base. So now Hendricks has to hustle down the line. He takes an awkward step at first and almost runs over the first baseman. Luckily, he didn't twist a knee and he came up okay. At least it looked that way, you know, last night. Who knows what today might bring, but it was a scary look, at least on the play. And if he gets hurt and then they bring in the DH, I think that'd be the worst case scenario. So the fact that we've gotten into the part of the spring where pitchers are hitting makes me believe that what you said is true. I think it's dead. Now, again, I think if it happens, it's going to be the night before the season almost, or two nights before. I think it's going to be that late if it happens. The fact that it hasn't happened yet, though, really, really makes me believe it's just not. It's just there is no sort of thaw here between the league and the union, and they're just not going to give in to expanded playoffs for the DH, which has been the sort of trade-off all along. So I do think it's dead, and the fact that pitchers are starting to hit just kind of points in that direction in my world.
Boy, and I said this on the podcast before, I think from Major League Baseball's perspective, it would be cutting off their nose despite their face if they allow the season to start without DH in the National League, because everyone wants it. Everyone thinks it's better. And I know that they're, from their perspective, they don't want to reward what they consider to be bad behavior by the union in the negotiations, but it's clearly better for the product. So instituted, even if they don't get the concession that they want, I think they got to do that.
And they might, Buster, they might. It's just, they're not going to show their hand until the final moments. So that's why I'm with you. It's dead for now. And no one's talking about, March 22nd, we're going to do it. But don't be shocked if it happens. So I'm with you, but we'll see.
Yep. Before we go, I want to run through some injury situations that now are beginning to threaten to bleed over into the regular season. I mentioned off the top the notes. Zach Eflin is having a back issue, and according to Joe Girardi, they're a little bit concerned about what's going on. He, to me, was a guy who was poised to take a big step forward this year, and the Phillies need it, given the state of their pitching. And Spencer Howard has also been dealing with a back issue on that staff. And yesterday we found out that Framber Valdez is not going to require surgery on that finger. But I got to tell you, my reaction was when I heard that, you get the sense that they're just kind of hoping that he can find a way to compete without having surgery, which might keep him out a long time. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be resolved in a positive fashion. So those are two injury situations I say keep an eye on. What about for you?
You know, it's kind of obvious, and it's not so much one or two injuries I'm looking at, but I've talked to enough people that, first of all, obviously they've gotten more inventory on the mound because of the jump from 60 games to 162. But it's the stress that if you have options, this is whatever, you have options, you are going to the minors. And we are going to build in this infrastructure where we can just dip down more than normal even and be ready when a guy goes down. So if it's a guy between options and no options, you know, normally sometimes you might release that guy without options because he's not as good, whatever. But this time around, you might keep that guy at the end of March here and just send down that prospect. I mean, we know that happens anyway a lot of times, but this year especially, they're not taking chances with players because of the expectation of the injuries that are going to happen. And here's the thing, Buster. I'm not sure if those injuries are going to pop up as early as, you know, some might think. This is more of a long-term thing, right? You have to hold on to that inventory because come July and August, when those innings start to pile up and they haven't thrown in a year and maybe pitchers are batting and there's some more injuries, like it's not right away that you need that inventory, but you are going to need it as the season moves along. So that's kind of what the vibe I'm getting on potential pitcher injuries. Let's be ready for June, July, and August as much as we can.
Yeah, when I talk to teams these days, I'm sure you're having the same experience about rotation options. I'm not getting six names. I'm getting like 10 or 11.
Yeah, it's great.
Running through it. They are evaluating their own rotations, not just on the front guys, but how many guys that you know, they're going to need to fill in the innings that you talk about.
And how do they get ahead of it? Like, in other words, When do they know this guy needs a breather before he's feeling it, right? Because I've heard that as well. Like, we have eight pitchers. Of course, we're not going to use them 1 through 8, but we're going to slot him in. So is it only when someone starts to feel it, or do they try to get ahead of it and realize, okay, he only threw, you know, X amount of innings last year. He's approaching that now. Let's give him a breather. Like, so there's all these discussions they've never had to have before. And you're right, it's 8 or 10 deep. So it's going to be a fascinating, you know, sort of year. And, you know, how do you hold back on guys so they're ready, you know, contending teams, so they're available for you in August and September? You know, all these things that maybe it happens once in a while, you know, Steven Strasburg back in the day, right? But now those discussions are going to be happening with, you know, probably 25 contending teams, whatever the number is, where they need their best guys ready down the stretch, and they just have to manage it until then.
All right, Jesse, good to talk with you. I will speak with you soon.
Absolutely, Buster. Take care.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. Sarah, are you a fantasy baseball player? And whether you are or not, I'm curious if you have a recommendation for friends who do play, like, you got to pick this guy based on what we're seeing.
So I don't really play fantasy baseball. One of my close friends from college, JT, has a team that he's been doing for a few years now, and I'm sort of like the advisor there. But to say that I log on and make any changes would be incorrect. But he actually had his draft, I think it was last night, and I was helping him with a couple things. And one guy I had him take sort of in a late round was Key Brian Hayes. And I mean, we've already talked about him here, but just I'm not super familiar with all of the categories in fantasy, but I know that batting average is important, and he's shown power, and he's shown that power even again in spring training this year. So he was a guy who I thought was worth keeping an eye on. But overall, I mean, it seems like Ronald Acuna Jr. was kind of built for fantasy baseball from everything I understand, because of the power speed combo and hitting for average, everything else.
You know, I just got done talking with him, and we're going to hear from him on the podcast on Friday, but I feel like Pete Alonso is just absolutely primed for a monster season.
Yeah, he's been crushing the ball in spring training. And I know a lot of Mets beat writers have pointed out the fact that, yes, spring training was short last year and it's just spring training, but he didn't hit a home run in the, you know, 3 weeks of spring training games we got last year before everything shut down. And I think he has, what, 3 or 4 this year, a bunch of doubles, bunch of games with multiple extra base hits. And you definitely see that confidence that we saw from him in 2019 at the plate that you really didn't see even when he was hitting those hard hit home runs in the regular season last year.
You know, he's an example of a player that I love. I think a lot of the analytics that is used is based on what players have done to a point, but players evolve, and nobody's a better example of that than Pete Alonso, whether it's defense or whether it's at the plate. And maybe, you know, for me, I underestimated his ability to make adjustments off of last year, but he clearly looks like he's doing that. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number 3.
Number three is 100. So watching the Phillies game, spring training game yesterday, and Jose Alvarado came in with some velo, which is what we're used to from him. So he had four of the five fastest pitches thrown in any tracked game yesterday. We have Statcast for some games, but not all of them. Two of those were 100 mile an hour pitches, and overall he's hit 100 at least six times in spring training. He didn't really do that much last year, but he only threw nine innings. He was hurt. But the 100 felt notable to me for the Phillies bullpen. So I took a look at it. And not even just Phillies bullpen, just Phillies pitchers. The last time a Phillies pitcher hit 100 on the radar gun was April 13th, 2019. Wow. From Sir Anthony Dominguez. 100 on the dot. And that was the only 100 mile an hour pitch they've had in those last two seasons. 100 is not a necessary. It's maybe an ideal for fun notes and everything else. But you know, velocity helps. As you go higher up that velocity chain, you're going to get lower batting average, lower slugging percentage in results. And I think that adding him to that bullpen is really going to be key for the Phillies.
Number two.
Number two is 91.1. So I know I have talked about Juan Soto already in our couple weeks of daily podcasts here a lot, and I promise I won't talk about him every week, but Dan Zimborski, who does the Zips projections, put out these numbers for projections for Soto through his age 36 season. And I wrote about this earlier in the week and looked into some context, and 91.1 is how much WAR he's projected to have through his age 36 season. So through 2035, which it's wild to even think of Juan Soto as age 36, but he will get there. We will all age. But here are the numbers. So a 298, 428, 593 slash line, 163 OPS plus. Again, 100 is league average. The 91.1 WAR, 2,317 hits, 1,996 RBI, 562 home runs, 1,762 walks. I mean, these are wild. A lot of what he's projected to do has never happened before in terms of certain season streaks. That RBI total is the exact number that Barry Bonds had in his career. And the thing you have to keep in mind is that projections usually lowball the guys a little bit. We don't expect projections to be wildly not what they're going to reach. And someone actually asked Dan on Twitter in response to this article when I put it out, what Mike Trout was projected to do at a similar time and what he actually did over that course. So if you look at like 2013 through 2020, and I don't have the exact numbers, but he outperformed the OPS plus and he just barely underperformed the WAR. And that's basically because the projection system was expecting his base running and defense to continue a little bit more what it was at the beginning of his career. But Mike Trout basically did it in terms of what it projected for him in this case. So there's no reason not to believe Juan Soto is going to do this.
Number one.
Number one is 20 and 291. So I know you talked about Bobby Witt Jr. on here yesterday, so I have a note on him. So he's going to be 20 years and 291 days old on opening day. In case he does make the roster, in case this is relevant, when I saw Dayton Moore say that we're not rolling it out, I had to go look this up. So there have been two Royals players to hit a home run at the major league level at a younger age than that. And it's Clint Hurdle and Buck Martinez. And they each hit four home runs before that age of 20-291. The youngest home run in Royals history was Hurdle at 20 years and 50 days. So Bobby Witt Jr. would not be the youngest player in Royals history if he were to make the team and home run opening day, but he would be close.
And there's so much excitement about him in Kansas City. It is interesting. And after Dayton said the other day that he's open-minded the idea of him being on the team to start the year, I went and looked at his numbers. And I wanted to get your perspective on this because when I saw the numbers, you know, I've thought of through the years how many times I've had a general manager, a farm director say, we want guys to dominate at a certain level. In his numbers in spring training this year, 35 plate appearances. He's 10 for 33 with 10 strikeouts and two walks. For me, when I look at young players, I look at the walk and strikeouts first in terms of whether or not they dominate a level. And while he's been the talk of camp, he's hit those long home runs, I don't look at those numbers as being this guy is crushing spring training. What about you?
I I agree. I think that the home runs have really changed the narrative with it a bit, and especially because the Royals have put out some TrackMan numbers on those home runs. He actually hasn't played in the StatCast park yet. That's something I'm waiting for, to see if he's really crushing the ball as much as it looks like he is. Not that if he weren't, it would mean, oh, he's not any good. But right. It's just a little bit more of an indication of exactly what he's doing, because it's so hard to tell on TV, streaming on your computer, watching a spring training game. But I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, you would like to see a guy who's going to come up that young be in a different situation in terms of walking more, plate discipline, and anything else. And I think of the guys who absolutely crushed spring training and really made a case to make the opening day roster. I think of Alonso 2 years ago, and I think he was doing more than we've seen from Witt. And that's okay, because again, Bobby Witt Jr. is 20 years old. No one is expecting him to do this, but I think it's almost like, you're looking for someone to be that guy who's going to have an amazing spring training and everyone's going to want to make the roster. And he's hit enough crazy home runs to be that conversation.
Yeah. And he has not played above rookie ball. And as I say, I just, my gut instinct is that Dayton Moore will want to have him dominate minor league level or two before he calls him up the big leagues. It wouldn't surprise me if he did play in the major sometime in 2021. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Ryan Divis covers the Seattle Mariners for the Seattle Times, and Ryan, you and I got started. You went right to what my first question was going to be, the fallout from what ex-CEO Kevin Mather said at the outset of spring training in a talk that went virtual very quickly.
Yeah, it went viral. I mean, I honestly, that wasn't what I was expecting to start spring training. I thought this was going to be a relatively dull spring training for a lot of reasons. And then Kevin Mather just kind of blew up the world. And it was, I'm still stunned. I told the story before, but I was sitting at an In-N-Out Burger that day, and somebody had sent me, I saw a tweet, and somebody had sent me the tweet, and it had notes about everything he said. And I didn't have my reading glasses, which I have, I'm ashamed to admit I have reading glasses. So I'm trying to hold the phone out far enough away from me to, so I could look and see what it was say, what he said. I still didn't grasp it. And so then I listened to it on the video, and like the more he spoke, the more, like, I just got up, walked to my vehicle, called my boss and said, we're going to need to write something really quick on this. And I called Larry Stone, our longtime columnist, said, you need to listen to this and you're going to have to write something on it because this is getting bad. And I listened to it a second time and it only got worse. And I just think that's going to loom. Like, the baseball players have moved on. You know, they baseball players have a great ability to compartmentalize and move on to the next day. But this still is a something that's going to linger over this organization for a while. And until they win or until they show significant changes, I just don't see it dissipating.
Right. As long as the current group is, you know, part of the front office, Jerry DePoto, Scott Service, the manager, they have to deal with this. They have to deal with this. And it's funny you mentioned about how players, and you're exactly right, they are really good at compartmentalizing. But you and I know that if whenever decisions are made now as we move forward with this group of people in the front office, the players are always going to look at it through the prism of what Mather said, which makes it really difficult, I think, for the Mariners front office to probably to do the job the way they anticipated being able to do it.
It's crazy. You know, Kevin Mather's statement when he resigned, and then even John Stanton, when he had the press conference, kept saying, well, you know, Kevin's thoughts and opinions don't represent our decision-making strategy. And I said to him, John, you know, he's the CEO and the team president. Everybody reported to him and he only had to report to you. How is it not reflective? I mean, like, if you're the president and everything he said in that about trying to manipulate the free agent market, service time manipulation, you know, the way he kind of treated players as commodities, I'm like, that, I'm sorry, that's indicative of the organization. And look, there are a ton of ownership groups that think this way, or presidents of teams and team owners that think this way, that worry about these things because it is a business, but they never get caught saying it on the record. They never go on a Zoom call and talk this freely or this just openly, and in such a way that it comes off as obtuse and galling. And they did that. And now it's like the whole name, they've given like this whole divide between the players and ownership and how owners are so cold. The Mariners have given a name and a face to it. And I just don't know that if the trust wasn't great to begin with, and it rarely is, like You know, the players don't trust ownership for that much, the front office. It can't get any better with all of this. So, yeah, Jerry DePoto is one of the most upbeat and positive human beings I've been around. And that next day after that all came out, I saw him at the complex, and he just looked like he had worn it for 3 days straight. And, you know, he knows this is the world he's going to have to walk through.
Yep, he's going to be wearing it as long as he's in that job for the Mariners. But, you know, I think one of the first questions everyone has is, as we move forward – and the front office understands the perception of players, especially since Jared Kelnick gave voice to it when he made the comments suggesting he's already had his service time manipulated. How will this affect the handling, in your eyes, of Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez, their two best prospects?
I think there's going to be constant scrutiny over them. Every little decision they make with Kelnick, even like Kelnick is going to play in finally coming back from a little adductor strain in his leg. And, you know, there's debates on whether they slow played it. You know, Kelnick made it sound like he was ready to go 4 days ago, but they don't want him in games because they don't want him to win that job. You know, that the injury was fortunate for the Mariners ownership because they can manipulate the service time even more. So every decision they make with Kelnick and every decision they make in the future with Julio Rodriguez, they will always have that tinge of, are they manipulating service time? If they say, oh, no, he needs more development. They need him. He needs a little bit more time at AAA. Do they really believe that, or do they really just want to try and steal another year of club control before he's gone to free agency? And I think, you know, that's just something that there's any way they can get around that unless they were to somehow sign Jared Kelnick to an extension to buy out that kind of club control time, or the same with Julio Rodriguez. Unless that happens, it's always going to be there. It's going to be that way with every prospect they have because, I mean, they admitted it. You know, Kevin admitted it. That's what they were doing. And it just looks so bad. And, I Tony Clark and his group have a copy of that recording that they're going to use coming up in the CBA negotiations. And I just think, you know, I just don't know how that they can get away with it. The players have moved on, though Jared Kelnick, knowing his personality, has not moved on from this. And he won't, you know, if he starts the season in the minor leagues, it's going to be an issue. He's going to say something about it. But it's just going to be there, and I don't know that they can do anything about it.
All right. How exciting, and put that conversation about aside about service time manipulation. As someone who's covered baseball a long time, how exciting are Kelnick and Rodriguez's prospects?
They haven't had talent like this since Griffey and A-Rod. I mean, I'm not saying those two are going to be that, but they haven't had potential talent. And this is an organization that had, you know, number three ranking with Baseball America 1 year. You know, they had Dustin Ackley, the number two overall pick, the single greatest college hitter in NCAA history for a while. But these two are just different. I think they're a product of the newer age of players. Kelnick has been basically, we joke that he's kind of a cyborg, that he was created in a lab, you know, because he's been hitting and preparing since day one. And Rodriguez is just this guy that, you know, he's got this smile. Like, so against the Royals, he's facing Carlos Hernandez, the Royals' number 15 prospect, throws him a 97-mile-per-hour fastball on a 3-1 count, and Rodriguez hit it 437 feet to the opposite field, opposite right center. Jeez. And it looked – and it came out of the box, and it was probably 20 feet off the ground, and it just kind of kept climbing and rising because it had so much backspin. And Buster, I know you've seen Nelson Cruz take batting practice. You know how Nelly will hit those low screamers that just kind of keep carrying. That's exactly what it was. And Scott Servais said the same thing. They haven't had that guy in the organization. They haven't had two players with this sort of potential since Griffey and A-Rod. I mean, and that speaks to the Mariners drafting and development issues as well. But this is their future. You're talking about an outfield with Kyle Lewis, Jared Kelnick, and Julio Rodriguez in probably 2022. I mean, that's about as good as it gets in terms of athleticism and potential. And I just don't know how long they'll be able to keep them all together.
Yeah. When I saw that swing on that home run, and forget the setup, the bat waggle of the person I'm going to say it reminded me of, but Gary Sheffield. Absolutely violent swing, as you say, to, you know, backspin the ball and have it go out in the way that it did. It absolutely reminded me of Sheff, you know, minus the bat waggle with a setup. Tell me about the other parts of the organization that we haven't seen yet that look like they could be really good within a couple of years.
I think they're pitching. You know, they've taken first-round picks. Their first-round picks have been pitchers the last, 3 years. And they really felt like they got a steal with Emerson Hancock, who was kind of projected to be 1-1 after his sophomore year. And then, you know, had a little bit of a slow start to his junior year. And there were, you know, when you're projected 1-1, you get picked apart pretty good. And he fell to them at 6, and they couldn't draft him fast enough. So you have him and Logan Gilbert, who he started the other day against the Angels, struck out Mike Trout, struck out Justin Upton. He looked really strong. And then you have George Kirby, another kid they got out of Elon, who's, you know, throwing 97. The problem is the layering of that and then the lost season last year, that really hurt Hancock and Kirby, and to the point where, you know, realistically, they're probably not contributors to the rotation until 2023, maybe end of 2022. Gilbert's ready to go. They're going to season him a little bit in spring training, though you could make the argument he's probably better than about three of the pitchers they have in their six-man rotation right now. But, you know, not having a season last year and not having that build, there are some injury concerns, and they want him to pitch later in the year. So they're going to control it by, I think, having 2- and 3-inning starts to start with and kind of control his usage. But I think that aspect, those three kids are pretty solid. They have a shortstop named Noelvi Marte, who's a top 100 prospect as well, though I think he'll eventually shift over to third base because he's so big. I think he's 6'2 or 6'3 and 210 pounds at like 19 years old. And so he just doesn't profile as a shortstop. So they, you know, you look at those pieces and they have some guys. I mean, I will say that when Jerry DePoto decided to do this rebuild, and I thought it was the right move at that time that they had to do it, you know, to trade Robinson Cano, which he had said 2 years before in just a random conversation that Cano was untradeable because of the contract. And to have Cano's agent and the serendipity of it all to trade him and trade a closer off a 57 save season that you knew could never replicate and sell high to get those guys, to get Justice Sheffield, to get all these guys in place, they really did the right thing. They've accumulated the talent that they didn't have in the minor league system before. They went from 30th to third in, I think, 3 seasons in terms of organizational rankings, and you can take those for what they're worth. But there's no doubt the talent is better. Now it's a matter of whether or not they can develop these guys to the point where they're consistent major league contributors, and that's been a problem with the Mariners from Mike Zunino to Brad Miller to a lot of these guys that were also touted prospects. They were unable to kind of develop them into what they should have been. I mean, they've all been competent major league players, but a lot of people felt like the ceiling was higher for them, and the Mariners hindered that process.
Yeah, the Robinson Cano trade over the last decade, that probably is in competition with the Nolan Arenado trade of being – when you looked at it, you're like, oh, my God, this is completely one-sided. We got about 60 seconds left. Tell me – I mean, clearly the American League West is down. The Astros are going through transition. When do the Mariners theoretically arrive?
I think they arrive maybe by the end of next year, but it depends on how they spend money this year or this offseason. I felt like they should have added this offseason, take advantage of the market, add a guy like Taijuan Walker, raise the floor, as they say. But right. Next year they need to get aggressive and sign some guys to help these young kids out.
All right, Ryan. Great to talk with you, and it's going to be interesting. It always is with the Mariners.
Yeah, usually it's never about baseball, unfortunately.
Bleacher Tweets.
Nice. I love that.
That is from Too Bad for Kelly Walker at Tinabulous. He writes in, "Hey, Taylor and Buster, nothing says spring birds like red-winged blackbirds loudly announcing their presence in the Finger Lakes." Thank you for that, Too Bad for Kelly Walker.
I love that. That is awesome.
Yeah, good stuff. Nice scenery there. Let's move on to the tweets here. We've got Jeff Trimmer at JTrim32. He writes in, "Following yesterday's discussion on Kansas City's willingness to play Bobby Witt and the possibility he makes the opening day roster, please tell me you believe the Orioles made the correct draft decision in choosing Adley Rutschman over Bobby Witt Jr."
I think so. Based on everything that I've heard, I think that's where, you know, teams across the board had the players ranked. And when you can get a catcher who could be someone who could do damage offensively, I think that's probably the way you're going to learn. You know, unfortunately, I just kind of bummed that the Orioles haven't made more moves to try to compete and to try to win more games. That mm-hmm. really bums me out. You know, having covered baseball in Baltimore for a couple of years and knowing how, you know, that fan base to me deserves a lot better than what they've got in the last couple of years.
I think the fans will be patient this year, but I don't think that will be the case for next year. Just my read on it. Let's go to DGB, Debbie Gammons Brown. She writes, and I think we need to know more about Buster's recurring dream about Abraham Lincoln. And I agree, Debbie. Do tell Buster.
Oh, my goodness. So I'm a Civil War nut. My stepfather's name, his last name is Lincoln. He's a very distant relative of Abraham Lincoln. So from the time I was a little kid, and I want to make it clear, I'm not related to Abraham Lincoln myself. But from the time I was a little kid, I was absolutely crazy about Civil War and Abraham Lincoln. And so I had this dream in which Abraham Lincoln was buried on this hill on our dairy farm. And I would go up and try to find his casket where he was buried on our dairy farm. And I've had that dream probably 30 times in my life.
Wow. Really that weird. Is wild. Yeah. Very cool. All right. Let's go to Andrew Campbell at Real Cam Drew. He writes in, St. Paddy's Day question, Buster. Who is the luckiest baseball player of all time? You have a couple answers here.
I do. And I, you know, I know, Andrew, that your question is meant to be fun. We'll start with this. This was a fun version of lucky. This was a game that the Reds were playing, and Paul O'Neill was in right field for the Cincinnati Reds. Give a listen.
Base hit right field, but they're going to have to hold Jelts at third. Going now, the ball gets away from O'Neill. He kicks it to Benzinger.
No, I do not believe this. This is the all-timer, Tommy. The absolute all-timer. He kicked the ball to Todd Benzinger. The absolute all-time play I may have ever seen. Paul O'Neill gave up on the ball game. He assumed with a base hit and unable to get the handle that Steve Jeltz was going to score. Steve Jeltz had to hold up because of the line drive past Benzinger.
Oh, this classic Johnny Bench, the Hall of Famer, recognizing right away what a crazy play. And I got to cover Paul O'Neill 4 years when he was with the Yankees. And in watching that play, what happened was he's trying to pick up a ball so he can make a throw home and cut the runner down at the plate. And he got frustrated because he couldn't pick up the ball. And so like a 10-year-old, it was like flipping over a game board. He just kicked the ball and went right to Todd Benzinger at first base, cutting off the runner from scoring. It was an incredibly lucky play, Taylor.
Yeah, I'd never seen that before. Pretty good kick, too, from Paul O'Neill. That was fun to watch. And
oh,
Johnny
by the way,
right
I don't know
away.
If you heard the Phillies fan. I'd never heard it until that last replay. Did you hear underneath the Phillies fan?
Yes, I did.
Dropping some profanity.
Yeah, give it another listen if you missed it. It's pretty funny.
So, and you know, in this part, when I saw the word lucky, of course, what popped to mind was this really poignant moment that happened in baseball history.
For the past 2 weeks, you've been reading about a bad brag. Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
That, of course, was Lou Gehrig, who will be honored starting this year, Lou Gehrig Day. I was talking with an official from Major League Baseball the other day, Taylor, and he told me that the response has been overwhelming. And it's really surprised them how many people have said, you know what can I do to help? What can I do to pitch in? What can I do in terms of donating? And they've been really pleased by the response.
Very cool. Yeah, that was a big deal when the day dropped. It was all over ESPN, so we'll be covering as well. Well, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. And listen to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. Tournament starts tomorrow. Buster, you fill out your bracket yet?
I have filled out my bracket, and I'm going to wax my son. I'm absolutely going to crush him. I'm very excited about that.
All right, can't wait.
All right, that's it for today. My thanks to Jesse, to Sarah, and to Ryan Divish. Thanks to him for joining, and Taylor as well. Thanks for listening, everybody. Stay safe, and remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.